Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. My name is Rob, and with me as always is Jason. It's kind of a weak one, wasn't it?
That was very weak.
Yeah.
Sorry. Sometimes your openers are just lackluster.
Well, you know, I'm just trying to give it some variety.
Well, like, you're like, sometimes it should be awesome and sometimes it should be not awesome.
Well,
that's a good thing. Listeners, do you hear that? Rob thinks you deserve not awesome content.
I'm just saying, sometimes I want to mix it up. I don't want it to be the same cadence and rhythm and inflection every time, you know? Because, I just want it to be, unique.
Fair enough.
I want it to be a unique experience.
Fair enough.
Yeah. How's it going?
It's going pretty good. I haven't been doing much this last week. I've been hanging out.
Yeah.
I've been back from my trip, so I'm just kind of resting. Still drinking my beer that I collected there.
Yeah, you brought me one here that I'm going to open live on the air. Let's see how this goes here, okay? If I can do this one. There. Ouch. That hurt a lot. I think I cut myself. There it is.
Opening beers is hard.
No, I was trying to do it. Yeah, I sure did cut myself. I was trying to do it with my arms outstretched right up next to the microphone.
Nice.
And this is kind of an awkward bottle opener, too.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's not the finger one we used to use.
Right.
So, what beer is that I brought you back from
you
Colorado?
You brought back for me Monty Python's Holy Grail Ale by Black Sheep Brewery. And you know what's funny? I've had this before once, like 10, maybe 15 years ago, back before I was a beer snob. And I thought it was awful. And I have not had it since. And now that I am kind of a beer snob and my tastes have changed, man, that's bleeding. Now that my tastes have changed, I'm actually excited to try it again. So, it has just a real simple aroma.
Well, it is tempered over witches.
Yeah, tempered over burning witches.
Yeah,
and
any other kind.
A bleeding finger. Yeah, that's fine. It's good. Well,
there you go.
Yeah, it's a good little simple ale.
Nice.
Nothing fancy, nothing complicated. It's tasty.
I'm drinking some Alaskan White,
which
is wheat ale brewed with spices.
Ooh.
It's pretty good.
What kinds of spices?
I don't know. Spices that taste good.
Polar bear spices, because there's a polar bear on the label.
There is. And the polar bear's like, rawr.
Rawr. Polar bear.
That was terrible.
Mine was better. What you been playing?
What have I been playing? I've been playing Quiddler.
Quiddler, hey, for the what does it say?
For the fun of words.
For the fun of words, it's Quiddler.
So basically, Quiddler. For those of you who don't know, have you ever?
I don't know.
Before?
No. Mm-hmm.
It's a game filled with cards with letters on them.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's one letter. Sometimes it's multiple letters, like Q U or, you know. So NT will be on there together. And you get these cards dealt to you, and you have to make words. You get points for the words you make. You get points for making the longest word, points for making the most words.
Okay.
And every round, you get more cards until you finally are done. And you have to use all your cards to play your word. And then once somebody lays all theirs down, then everyone else has to lay theirs down.
Mm-hmm.
And they get deductions for the ones that they still left in their hand.
Oh.
I like word games. You've talked about word games before.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, this is a card game that involves words.
That's good. I think word games are kind of hard to do fun, you know? Because last time we talked about Bananagrams and Scrabble, right?
Yeah.
And Scrabble, you love, I hate.
Right.
Because it's too complex.
Right.
Bananagrams is a nice simplified version of that. Because it's a lot simpler, it's a lot more accessible than Scrabble, but it has the same idea. So you're putting letters together.
This is like Scrabble meets Phase 10.
Okay.
Except for the only reason it's like Phase 10 is because there are
cards
and it gets bigger as you go.
Okay.
Like you get more cards each round.
Okay.
But other than that, it's nothing like Phase 10.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
But it's a fun game.
Yeah.
I actually first learned how to play it in Alaska, which is funny. That's not, I didn't intend that combo there, but I just realized that on a train in Alaska, some people were like, you ever play games at all? And I was like, oh yeah, I like games. He's like, well, we're just sitting here on this train. You want to play a game of this Quiddler game? It's like, I'm really good at it. I got to warn you. Schooled him. Like, just burned him. But it's because I know the Scrabble words. As we talked about previously, we talked about Scrabble. So, I mean, I just torched the guy.
Yeah.
And the whole time, my wife is just laughing to herself. She's like, I knew when he said, I'm pretty good at this, you were just going to beat him, and you were going to think it was hilarious.
So, that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
That's good.
So that was cool. Super nice guy, though. Yeah.
Good.
But, yeah, it was a fun game. It's not, I mean, it's nothing special, but it's what I've been playing.
Good.
I've been working on a lot of prototype stuff right now, so that's been kind of taking my game time up.
Sure.
So.
Yeah, understood.
How about you? What you been playing?
I've been playing a game that we actually picked up at Gen Con this past year. We bought it. It was like $7.
Hey,
and it's a tile-based game that, and we like Carcassonne a lot. We like tile games.
You like tile games? I had
no
idea.
No way. There's a polar bear on the label. it's called Architecton. I'm not sure how to pronounce that. But it's by Queen Games. My wife actually picked it out. Because it's two-player only, and we like two-player games. And it's tiles, and because it was $7.
Good combo. Uh-huh. So you're like, two players, $7. I like the box. Let's get it.
It's got nice artwork.
I've bought games on less than that.
Yeah,
so.
Sure. And it's a really simple idea. You have these tiles. They're little square tiles, maybe an inch and a half on a side. And some of them are landscape tiles, and some of them are building tiles. And you're putting down, trying to kind of connect this play area.
Okay.
The building tiles are, I guess they'd be house tiles. Those tiles have an actual house on them, a picture of a house.
Indeed they do.
And then they have some kind of landscape on all four sides. And there are four different kinds of landscapes. There's grass, water, forest, and desert. Or I guess it might be dirt. Okay, and you might have a different one on all four sides. You might have two that are the same or three sides of the same of those building tiles or whatever. And then you have these separate landscape tiles that are all the same type of landscape, same type of terrain all in one tile. And what you're doing is you're laying down these tiles one at a time. And when you're playing a tile, you can choose to either take a house tile or a landscape tile. And you're laying them down. You're trying to connect landscape tiles on all four sides of the house tile.
Okay.
And then if you can match the type of landscape to all four sides, then you get a point for that.
Cool.
All right. But if somebody else closes the fourth side of that around your house and that fourth side doesn't match, so if three of your four sides match, but the fourth one doesn't, you don't get a point. You actually lose a point. And if two of your sides don't match when it's closed, you lose 2 points. If three of your sides don't match, you lose 3 points. Okay, so it's this constant going back and forth, getting points, losing a bunch of points, right? The other interesting thing about the game, though, is that you can't play house tiles and landscape tiles next to each other. The same tile type cannot be adjacent to it. So you're playing these things as like a checkerboard.
Oh, okay.
Okay,
cool.
So if you can't have two house tiles next to each other, they always have to be like kitty corner from each other, or diagonal from each other.
Okay, cool. All
right, so that really limits your options, and it forces a lot of strategy. You don't just simply draw a tile from the top of the stack. There's like a ready area where you have three house tiles and three landscape tiles that are face up. And you can, on your turn, you can pick two of those to play. Any two that you want, but you have six choices, you're going to pick two of those six.
And everyone can see those.
Everyone can see
those.
Right. Nice. And it's two player only, right?
Okay.
Okay. And then as you place every time you place a house tile, you have these little wooden, they're kind of like meeples. They're little house things, but they're little wooden.
House-eeples.
House-eeples, sure. Heeples. And you put one of those every time you play a house tile, and that claims that as yours. And so as you're trying to close these things, you're getting points. But at the end of the game, you're going to get bonus points for having the most number of houses in a diagonal. So
okay.
Yeah, so let's say at the end of the game, I've only got 4 points, but my wife has 6 points.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that she's managed to get that many points. But so she wins, right? Except I might have 7 houses in a diagonal, and she might only have 3 houses in a diagonal.
Okay.
And she might have 3 of those diagonals, but she's only get to score for one.
And she only gets to score for the best one.
For the best one, right.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm actually going to win because I add those 7 points to the ones I had before, and I'm going to win.
So you're balancing blocking people's diagonals along with trying to decide which type of terrain you want to screw them with.
Exactly.
Nice. I like it.
Yeah, and it's really, really super strategic. It plays really fast. We sat down and played it, and it took us a a few minutes for that to click for us, that checkerboard idea to click for us, and then the strategy. We had to play through a whole game before the strategy made any sense to us. But once we played that through, one game took us 25 minutes. And so I think we played three games in a row. I beat her 2 out of 3, so that's good. Finally something that I can maybe beat her at. We'll see. She destroys me at everything else.
She does.
And it was fun. It was really, like I said, it plays quick, great for two players only. We really like two-player games. That's what we spend our most time with.
Excellent.
Yeah. Yeah, so highly recommended. Highly recommended. Especially if you can get it for $7. Man, just grab it up.
Mm-hmm. That's my ninja grab. Was grabbing the game. Yeah. I wasn't actually, because you're too far away. Mm-hmm. But you get the point.
Yeah.
So
Architecting. Hey, it's by Michael Schacht. He's the designer. Schacht by Queen Games.
All right. Keep an eye out for it, listeners.
Yeah, it's good stuff.
But in the meantime, it's time for the mechanic of the week.
Actually, that was a little better than before. Mechanic of the Week, it's my turn, right?
It is.
Yep. And I wanted to talk about something that was inspired by Architecting here, and I've seen this in other games.
Okay.
There's not a lot of tiles in the game. I don't remember exactly off the top of my head how many there are each of landscape and building tiles or house tiles. But there's a limited number, and if you play the game enough, and if you're the kind of person who pays attention, you could memorize how many tiles are left, or how many tiles of each type are in the game, and you could get some kind of idea by counting tiles as to what's going to come up next. Because the game ends when you run out of tiles.
Right.
So one thing that the game does, at the start of the game, you take 4 tiles from the top of each stack and set them aside. And you don't know what tiles those are that you set aside.
Yeah.
So it's that idea of forcing you to not know for sure what's coming up.
Stopping you from counting cards in Vegas.
Exactly right. And so I wanted to bring that up, which I think that's an ingenious idea. And the rules told us to pull those out and set those aside. And we're like, okay, I guess we'll need those later. And then we never needed those. And only after we played it through the first time and went back and said, well, wait, what about those? Did it click for me? Oh, that's to prevent us from counting cards.
Yes.
And I think it's a great idea.
Another game that you use that in, Settlers of Catan, if you use the event cards instead of rolling dice.
Okay.
They have you take the end of year card, basically. I think it's the end of year card or something. I don't know. The end of season card.
Uh-huh.
Anyways, New Year, that's what the card's called.
Mm-hmm.
And you put that 5 cards up from the bottom. So there are 5 cards that won't get drawn. Which, if those are a decent spread, that's cool. But if those are all 8s or all 6s or something, it can really change the gameplay. But it makes it so that you can't count the cards.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it's a cool thing that, I don't think that way. I'm not the kind of guy who counts cards. So that's the kind of thing that if I'm designing card games, I need to stop and kind of remind myself to think about that sort of thing.
Right.
And be aware of that. Because there are people who are very into that part of the strategy.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, if you imagine applying that to a game like Magic the Gathering.
Oh, yeah.
You build a deck of 60 cards, then you take 4 and throw them away.
And you don't know what 4 of those are.
Yeah, that, it's neat because it does. It forces a whole new kind of idea of a strategy.
Right.
It would be interesting to apply that, I think, to a deck building game, right?
Yeah, sure, it would, yeah. Yeah, right, that'd be weird. Now, a couple other games that use that come to mind here. One is Pompeii. We both have squeaky chairs.
Yes, we do. Yeah. We need to get new chairs up in here.
Yeah, I'm cheap. I need a new computer first.
I could bring over some folding chairs that are less loud.
Well, whatever. Pompeii does that because there are cards in the game that determine where you can place your family members on the board.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to pull a certain number of cards out at the start of the game. When you have to, literally, at the start of the game, the setup of the game is stacking the deck so that the event cards, to make the volcano come within a reasonable time part of the game. And part of that is pulling some cards out and setting them aside so to prevent the card counting. And that works well. And then the other game completely just fell out of my head. I can't remember what it was. Can you think of anything else?
I can't. I mean, I've not seen that in a ton of games. I'm aware of it.
Yeah.
But,
gosh. There's a polar bear on the label. I don't know. Anyway, it's an interesting thing. So, what other games might be improved or might be significantly changed by doing that? What do you think? I mean, Magic is a great example. It'd be really interesting to... Because people spend so much time building and polishing and perfecting their decks, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that you would... I think as a non-player, I could say it would make Magic better because it'd be funny.
Yeah.
As a player, they would probably all disagree with you.
Oh, God, it would be a nightmare for them.
Yeah, I mean, it would ruin their... Because there's... Well, I mean, worst case, right? You can put up to 4 of one card in there, right?
I don't know.
No, I'm saying. I believe you can put up to 4 of one card in there. Mm-hmm. So if all 4 of that one card happen to get pulled out, that really stinks.
Yeah, that would suck bad.
I mean, I don't know what strategy is for deck building games. But, I mean, there are a lot of deck building games. What about a Dominion? Could you apply that to a game like Dominion?
Well, see, that's tough because with most of the deck building games, you know, you start with almost nothing, you know, and then you're just building your deck up. And the game ends when you've got a really big deck. This kind of idea starts you out with a big deck that you're going to play the game with, you know, because Dominion, the game is about building a deck, right? It's about getting more and more cards and building all these special abilities to get as many points as you can, getting those points into your deck. So if at some point in the game you were just going to randomly take 4 out, it would kind of suck, but in some cases it might be really good for you.
Right, because a game like that, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're trying to get rid of extra cards that you don't...
At some point in the game,
Ascension, you start with a base set of cards,
yeah,
and you're trying to get better cards.
Yeah.
So for them to make you ditch 4 cards, if you ended up ditching 4 of the starting cards, bonus, you'd be like, bounce!
Yeah, right, which might be okay. Yeah, I think it would work better for a game where you start with full deck.
You know? Always good to be playing with a full deck.
Yeah.
As they say.
Well, what if it was just poker? What if you're just playing poker and pulled 4 cards out? 5 cards out, you know?
Wow.
That would totally change that game.
Oh, yeah.
Or blackjack.
Right. Know? Well, a game like poker, especially because you're thinking about, you know, the hand possibilities.
Yeah.
And if 5 cards or even 4 cards were gone from that really could cause some problems.
But with poker, generally you would reshuffle the deck after every hand. Well, if you're playing Hold'em, maybe other kinds of poker.
Yeah, but still, I mean, taking 4 cards and whipping them out every time.
But you yourself wouldn't know which ones those are, so I don't know that it would change your... It would change the odds for the game as a whole, but for your point of view, maybe it wouldn't. I don't know, for your judgment. I don't know. I don't know enough about poker and about odds and all that kind of stuff to give an educated thought on that, I guess.
I mean, I know people really calculate pot odds and stuff, but I'm just not that good with math, so I don't try.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's all. I'm just not that good with math. I mean, I know that if I have a 3, 4, 5, 6, and I'm waiting for a 7... No, if I have a 2, 3, 4, 5, and I need a 6 to complete my straight... It's harder to do that than if I have a 3, 4, 5, 6, because then I have an open-ended straight draw. A 2 or a 7 would help me.
How about this one? How about Lost Cities? And you just pull 4 random cards out.
Well, that's a good example. That is a really good example.
Because that's one of those kind of games where you count on specific cards being in there.
Right.
You know? And sometimes you just hold off and wait in the hopes that you get that last card that you think might be there. And it might not be there, and it might just end up screwing you over. That might be a good thought.
I actually really like that, because, I mean, it would suck when playing that game, because that game is already hard enough to strategize at.
It's true, yeah.
Because so many times you're like, I'll just play the 10, and then you're like, oh, I just drew the stinking 9!
Yeah, right.
So, that would be, if you wanted to test that theory, that would be the game to do it.
Right.
Most definitely.
Yeah. At any rate, pulling cards out at random to prevent card counting. Or in the case of Architecton, pulling tiles out. You know, pulling some part of the known information away. I guess you would call that removing an unknown part of the known information. To induce some kind of unpredictability.
Right. I mean, if it's a game where you are going to burn through the whole deck, if that is the meaning of the game,
yeah,
then you've eliminated some of the randomness, right?
Yep.
Because you know that by the end of the game, you will burn through that whole deck.
Yeah.
You take 4 cards out, suddenly it's random again. because now you don't know which cards, you know. Obviously, there's a randomness to the drawing of the cards, but...
Mm-hmm.
And so on. I think you understand what it is I mean when I say that.
So. Yeah. Yeah. So, anyway. So, it's an interesting thing.
I can't think of any... I mean, I'm sure there are some other games where you could do that.
Yeah.
Gosh,
there was something else in my head that was a really good example.
Lost Cities. I mean, I think Lost Cities is a pretty spectacular example. Carcassonne, you could do that, right? The tiles are face down.
Yeah, there's so many tiles in Carcassonne, though, that...
You'd have to take out more than four for
it to matter. For it to really make any kind of an impact. Right. And even then... I mean, counting tiles might not really give you a whole lot of benefit in Carcassonne.
I can think of a game. It's a game I've talked about before. It's not a super popular game, so I don't know how helpful it'll be, but Lawless is a good one.
Oh, yeah.
Because there are some pretty specific characters in there that you look for. Like, you want the mayor. You're waiting for the mayor. When that mayor pops, man, if you buy him if it's on your turn, no matter what you got to do, because the mayor is like... So basically what the mayor says is... You can reread, like, that's the game where the action point system for buying cards
goes
from 1
right.
to 6.
Mm-hmm.
The mayor on every turn can reorganize that to how he sees fit. Mm. It's completely broken. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. Because literally, on your turn, you make the best thing the cheapest, and on everyone else's turn, you make the best thing the most expensive. And you can do it immediately.
Yeah.
So they never get a chance. Like, you're like, oh, you need cows. Cows cost a lot.
Mm.
You know, so... So, yeah, that... I mean, that's a good example of where a card is very broken. I mean, the reason that I would say it's not completely broken is because he becomes the target for everything.
Sure.
Everyone hates the player that has the mayor. And everyone will screw them over at every chance they get because the mayor is so terrible.
Yeah. Okay.
But that's a good game where you could do that. You take four or five cards out and be like, I mean, if you got some cows, nobody cares. But if you got some of the important characters, it could really jack it up.
Change a lot, yeah.
So...
Hmm. Okay. Interesting. Well, anyway, we should move on from there, huh?
Let's.
I think we're moving on to. It's practicing the pitch. Hey.
It was like a ninja. Like bam. It was like a ninja rolled into a circus announcer.
Rolled into a polar bear on the label.
Why are you so excited about the polar bear on the label?
I think it's funny.
I'm glad that I didn't see a polar bear when I was in.
It's a callback.
What if I had seen a polar bear in the hot tub when I was in Colorado?
That would have been pretty funny.
He probably would have eaten my face.
Probably, because those dudes are big.
Mean, and they're mean, too.
And they're not in Colorado.
Which I'm happy about.
Yeah. Well, it's your turn to pitch that game tonight, sir. So you've got one here that I don't know what it is. We have talked about this zero.
Yeah, I purposely kept this game from you. The only thing I told you was that I had an idea for a strictly two-player board game. And that I thought of it on the way home from Colorado.
Yes.
On my 1,200-mile drive.
I'm still bleeding, by the way. Oh,
my gosh. Something else you can find in the Architect on Tiles, Rob's Dried Blood. That's not sanitary, folks. Okay. So, I don't have a name for this game yet. It does kind of tie in with stuff I saw in Colorado. Obviously, we were in Estes Park. We were seeing a lot of woodsy stuff.
Yep.
And something struck me, and that was the dynamic of being in a place where there's very woodsy stuff, right? Where there's, you know, trails you can hike on and all these woodsy things you can do and nature-y things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then right next door, there's just a lot of things coming at you in regards to, like, buy this, buy that, buy this souvenir, go to this fun park. Take this water slide. You know what I mean? That kind of...
Okay, sure.
So kind of the duality there, right? Between nature and business.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought, what if you had a two-player game? Right now, it's just listed as conservator versus developer, right?
Oh, okay.
Because, because those are the two characters you play in the game, right?
Okay.
So you start with a set board. I was thinking a modular board, but honestly, I think a set board makes a little more sense. You've got a set board... and then when you start out, that set board is all wilderness area, right? There's a couple mountains, there's rivers, there's lakes. And then on one side, you have a park. And on the opposite side, you have a town, right? The conservator plays on the park side. The developer plays on the town side.
Okay.
They each have two separate decks. And the goal of each of them is to expand their stuff. And who at the end of the game wants all the spaces, because basically you've got a bunch of card-shaped spaces on the board that make this map of this untamed wilderness area between the park and the town. And the idea is the conservator wants to play lots of things like nature preserves and hiking trails and that kind of stuff, right? And at the same time, the developer wants to build casinos and water parks and condos, right?
Okay.
So they each have their own deck. And at the end, the winner, like I said, is whoever did the most out of that. So every turn, you're going to get income based on the things you have, right? So like at the beginning, I've got a park as the conservator. I'm going to make, say, and the income would be in hundreds of dollars. It would just to keep it simple, sure. Right? So like the park gives me $100 a turn, right? So I collect those tokens, and then I can play new places. But those have to be attached to something that's already out there, right? Mm-hmm. And there's different types of places. There's plains, there's rivers, you know, there's mountains, there's forests. And a lot of those things I want to play can only be played in certain types of things. Has to be played in a forest, right? The, for instance, the powerboat rentals from the developer have to be played on a lake, right? The whitewater rafting from the nature side has to be played on a river, right? Mm-hmm. So and the idea is there'd be multiples of each. The mountain climbing or the nature, you know, the mountain climbing, hiking would be, have to be played on the mountain. Whereas the mountain spa would have to be played on the mountain by the developer. Does that make sense?
Yeah, okay.
So as you grow, you get more money. And as you have more money, you can build bigger stuff. Like the casino is going to cost more to build than the rest, like, you know, than the wild game restaurant.
Yeah.
So basically, and this is a very simple game for what I normally come up with, right?
Yeah.
There's basically one real mechanic, which is you on your turn, you draw a couple cards, right? I think you would always draw back up to five, we'll say. And then you play cards, right? Every card you play has a monetary value on it. There are action cards and there are location cards. So to play an action, you actually have to pay money.
Mm-hmm.
Some would be exempt from that. Like the conservator has a card called Benefactor,
mm-hmm.
which basically means someone just donated a bunch of money to the wildlife and say that's $500 they get. They don't have to pay to play that card. It would say zero for paying, right?
Okay.
But if they wanted to build the, say, the fishing sanctuary or the elk viewing sanctuary, they would have to pay to build that. And then they would get income from that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So every turn, you're getting more income as you go. The action cards are where it gets kind of fun because the action cards allow you to screw the other player.
Uh-huh.
Like, I can see you're about to build on a mountain, right? You're getting ready. You could build that mountain spa. You just got there. I think you might build it. So I will play a chain myself to a tree card, which I play on there, right? And that's going to stop you for a turn from being able to build there.
Mm-hmm.
Because as the conservator, I've had some hippies go out and chain themselves to the tree to stop you from getting there, right?
Yeah.
As a developer, I could pay a bribe to someone. Like, the bribe card allows me to remove that card.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the other things that the developer can do is they can call in a favor. They could get a bank loan, which allows them to get a bunch of money, but they have to pay it back the very next turn. So, you know, you kind of have to hedge your bets with what you're going to build. They might get a new investor card, which just says, here's $500 to spend on building stuff. Even stuff like the conservator can do things like monkey wrench. So they can go to the casino and say, oh, you're not going to get any money from the casino this turn because I've shut her down.
Got it.
Via sabotage.
Mm-hmm.
So, So that's basically the simple part of the game. Does everything make sense so far?
I think so. So just to make sure I'm on the same page.
Yeah, go right ahead.
You have to spend money to play a card, to build something out there in the world.
Or play an action.
Or play an action, okay. And then the idea is that the more things that you build out there, the more money you're going to rake in on your next turn.
Yes.
So those things are going to generate revenue.
Every turn, everything generates money.
Okay.
Makes sense. Yeah, so the idea is you're getting a lot more money. But some of the cards would be very expensive to play.
Of course, right.
And so
some of those you might get early in the game and want to hold on to them in your hand for a while.
Right. Some of them you would have to. You know what I mean? It might be useful to say every turn you draw a card. So just you draw a card every turn no matter what.
Yeah.
Because then you could have 20 cards in your hand at some point, right? Because otherwise you could get stuck with a bunch of high value cards and have no way to build them, mm-hmm. which would stink.
Well, so, well, you could just make give the option of a discard or something too, you know. And then if I
get dealt five really high value things, then I'm mm-hmm. going to help me later in the game, right?
Well, and then you later you have a card that'll let you take something from the trash, maybe, or from your discard.
Garbage picker, I like it.
Yeah, there you go. So recycling for the developer, and garbage picker for the conservator.
I like it. Actually, it'd probably be the opposite.
You're right. It would. Yeah.
So
homeless guy versus recycler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't feed the bears.
There's a polar bear on the label.
There is. I feel like one of the cards for the developer would be like bear attack. Like, so it's like bad press, right? Like, oh, somebody got eaten by a bear. Yeah, so then the park's revenues go down for a turn because. So the idea is it's a pretty simple, straightforward game,
sure,
right?
Yeah, I like mean, it.
Literally, the game is a board, two decks of cards. I'm picturing 54 cards each. It's 108 cards. Mm-hmm. And then your money tokens. That's the game.
Now, when you're laying these things out, you're laying these cards out on the actual board.
Yes.
And so the board is gridded out.
Yes.
So a card will fit on a specific
yep, spot. That was my thought. Because okay. I was going to do cards and then tokens. Like, I play the casino and you have to pull up the casino token. And I thought, mm-hmm. why bother?
Yeah.
Why not just have cards fit?
Now, see, to me, that is a situation where it would make sense to have square cards instead of normal shaped cards. Because yes. that would fit on a square
completely
board.
Agree.
Yeah, very nicely.
Yep. The game Castle that I've played before... Uh-huh. It's a game of intrigue that has square cards. And okay. that's an instance where, yeah, those square cards work perfectly. Because yeah. you're laying them out in certain places.
And each pre-drawn grid on the board would be identified as this is a water tile
yep.
this, or water space. This is a mountain space.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And then there would be nice artwork on the place to kind of match it up to that.
Yeah. Know? Yeah, sure.
So here's what I really like about the game mm-hmm. is it's, I think it's got replayability because... You have two different roles you can play, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so each game, you know, there would have to be a rolling mechanic or something to... Maybe you would each just draw a card of the deck. Person with the highest value gets to determine who they want to be. You know,
sure. something like that. Yeah.
Or maybe somebody's got a favorite they'd rather play, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I like the idea that I play one game as the conservator with one very different strategy than the game I would play as the developer. And it would be built that way.
Yeah.
Things with the developer would cost more, mm-hmm. but they would get more money. Mm-hmm. Things with the, you know, the other one, they would have more powers to stop the developer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because I think in the real world, that's true. You know, I would want to try and make it true to life.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. Have the balance, but different approaches or different strategies.
Right.
Yeah. I think that's a great idea.
So.
And you could do an expansion where you're adding in some other third party that you could play instead of the conservator, instead of the
right.
the town.
Maybe. Or maybe in addition to, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. That could work too. So.
You could play the aliens invading.
You could. That doesn't make any sense, but you could.
But
maybe
just...
you could play as the animals and they're attacking people.
Oh, that's a better idea. That's a much better
idea. I'm going to play as the bears. So, any thoughts on ways to change that other than that?
Not really. That's, I like that.
I'm working on my Troublemaker Camp prototype too,
yeah.
but I'm going to prototype this one just because it's so stinking easy to prototype.
Yeah.
I mean, I can basically cut in half a bunch of index cards.
Mm-hmm.
Draw a board with square tiles on it.
Yeah.
And I'm making a prototype. So
yeah.
I've got about 50% of the cards designed,
oh,
or at
okay.
least listed.
Yeah.
One of the things that's throwing me through a loop is balancing money. I think that'll be actually the single hardest thing about this game will be balancing...
What I would say is that every card that you have out there would generate one unit of money, so $100. For every card you have in play, they would each generate $100 for you per turn. Except for some of the really, really high-cost ones, and then they might generate $200 per turn.
Right. I mean, yeah, it would not be like a bunch of different crazy amounts.
Mm-hmm.
It would
yeah.
be like, some give you $1,000 a turn. I think the most you'd get a turn is maybe $200 or $300.
Yeah.
And that would be something that would be ridiculously expensive.
Yeah. And then in terms of that, as long as you have the same values in each deck
right.
for things that can be built out in the area.
Yeah. I mean, the other thing to balance, yes, is... I have enough cards to build on rivers. I have enough cards to build on...
Yeah.
But you could also tweak that a little bit and say the developer has slightly more to build in the plains tiles, right? Because that's the easy place to develop, mm-hmm. right? So maybe that actually makes sense.
Sure.
And maybe the hiker guy, I mean the conservator ones, has a few more tiles they can build in the mountain, right? Mm-hmm. So that kind of...
But you also want the players to be competing for the same space.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm saying they could be competing in... Because there you've got plains, forests, rivers, lakes, and mountains.
Mm-hmm.
So there's five different things. So if they were competing head-to-head in three of those, and then not quite as much in two, I think it adds a little flavor for each one.
Yeah. Yeah.
There would be some tiles, too, that would say you could build anywhere.
Sure.
Like, you know, the simple ones would say you could build everywhere. Like
on any terrain.
Rustic. Well, I think I have, like, a campground that can be built anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then a rustic campground, which can only be built in the forest because, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah.
So it's been kind of fun trying to come up with the different things. The easiest things are to come up for the developer because it's like
yeah.
casinos, bars, dance clubs. You know what I mean? Like, right. It's easy to think of that stuff.
Right, touristy crap.
Right, right.
Yeah. Lakefront homes. Yeah.
Right, yeah, condos is one of them.
Condos, yeah. There you go.
I had condos, fancy cabins, and stuff like that. So yeah, I'm like I said, I'm about 50% of the way through a prototype on it. It's just one of those where I feel like the rules are so simple. Why not just give it a try?
Yeah,
right?
Give it a shot.
I'm still working on a few things with the Troublemaker game. Anyways, the camp game.
Yeah.
So I thought it might be a nice little break from that to quick throw this prototype together and then just give it a few plays and see if it sticks. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it's a 2-player game, which means I can test it directly with my wife, like as a perfect scenario. It's not like the camp game where there's two of us playing, but it really would be better for four or three.
Sure.
So.
Okay. That's good. I like it.
So, yeah, if I get the prototype together and we get through it a couple times, I'll bring it over and you and I can record some prototyping.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Some play testing of it. So,
I like it.
No name yet.
No name, yeah.
I was trying to think of, like, I kept thinking of wide open spaces, and I was trying to think of a way to have, like, the name be, like, something like a wide open spaces, but with a tag at the end that basically, like, you know what I mean, that harkens to the developer, right? Mm-hmm. So
something kind of punny.
Yeah. I thought that might be kind of fun. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So anyways, I thought, like I said, this literally was, I was driving home.
Mm-hmm.
It popped in my head and normally I would immediately write it down, but I was driving. So I instead pitched it to my wife and my mom while I was in the car.
Driving, yeah.
I was like, okay guys, just listen, I got to get this out of my head and I got to tell somebody. And they both really liked it. Yeah. So,
yeah. And I want to think more about 2-player games myself, right. You know, in fact, the next one I'm going to pitch is going to be a 2-player game.
Cool. I know I've run into the issue, and I think you have sometimes too, that it's sometimes hard to think of just a 2-player game.
It is.
Even though we like those,
mm-hmm.
it's really easy to make a 4-player game comparatively, I think.
Yeah, I think so. You know, we're running a little short here. Can we talk about something else that's actually been kind of in my head that is relative to this conversation?
I would love that.
Okay. Names. Names for games.
Yeah.
That's hard.
It's tough, yeah.
That's tough. Like, so you're this game, who the heck knows what to call that? Let me talk about this in terms of the fair food game that I pitched last week.
Right.
Okay? The name that's bouncing around my head is Fair Food. Well, that's a terrible name.
It's a terrible name, yeah.
It's descriptive of what you're doing in the game, but it's a terrible, terrible name. So what I want to do is I want to call this something like the Blank County Fair. Or the Blank County Fair Gastronomical Society, or something kind of long and silly like that, right. You know, or like something with lots of matching words, matching first letters of the words, finding food at the Fairmont County Fair, or I don't know,
right.
Fairmont Fair is that right? But you know, this is the kind of thing that we want a name to be catchy and descriptive,
right?
And that's so hard.
And there, you know, there are so many good names out there that we know of from other game designers.
Yeah, I think a great example is Great Heartland Hauling Company. That started out as just called Over the Road,
right?
And now it's called the Great Heartland Hauling Company, which is a way better name.
Yeah, it's really it's hard to forget that game when you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, Over the Road could be a game about a lot of different road things, right? But
mm-hmm.
the Great Heartland Hauling Company, like, you're hauling stuff through the heartland. Like,
yes.
I said, I bet it's a pickup and delivery game when you heard a name like that, right?
It fits, right.
Right.
Without saying, this is a pickup and delivery game.
But, you know, there are other things like Scallywags, you know, by
Chevy Dodd.
Chevy Dodd. That's a great example of like just using a pirate word.
Yeah.
To, I mean, he could have called it any pirate name, right? But, you know, based on what I've seen in the game where you're using the tokens and stuff, like, Scallywags is pretty fitting, right? Because it's a little silly, right?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't sound too, like, it's not like...
It's whimsical, though.
It's not like Death Pirates, you know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
Another good one is Mars Needs Mechanics. I mean, like, that's obviously, like, he's, you know, he's pulling that from some other things.
Mars Needs Moms.
Yeah. But Mars Needs Mechanics sounds way better.
Yeah.
So, there are a lot of different names that are kind of awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, there's a couple different ways to go. You can try and make something simple, like Scallywags, that just pretty much describes,
mm-hmm.
like, doesn't really describe the game.
No, but it's catchy.
It gives you a flavor, and it's catchy, right? Or you can go with something like Great Heartland Hauling, that's very descriptive of what the game is.
Mm-hmm.
Jungle Ascent's another one, and that's really descriptive of that is the game. Like, what are you doing? I'm ascending something in the jungle.
Yeah.
Like, that's the game.
Yeah.
Trying to think of another game. I mean, Settlers of Catan, right? Like, I'm settling stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I would say Sentinels in the Multiverse is a good one because it's not...
Yeah.
It doesn't describe the game as much as it says, this is a game about comic book.
Right, it sets a tone. It sets tones and a feeling. Speaking of Sentinels, I got the Infernal Relics expansion in the mail. Can't wait to play it. Super excited. And it came with all those great Kickstarter bonuses. Man, shout out to Greater Than Games. All those guys, Sentinels, God, they just nail it every time. I mean, the artwork is incredible. They have just so much value for your cash. Moving on, sorry.
That's good.
Yeah.
You know, another way you can go is creating a word. Scrabble.
Oh, that's a good point.
Quiddler,
right. Making up a name. Yeah.
Well, that's like...
we Architecton.
Yeah. What are you doing? It's architectural. I mean, that's what I learned from that. It's architectural.
And it's not really.
That's the thing, is it's not
it's,
really.
That's the tone. That's kind of you're building these... It's kind of an abstract strategy game, so having this kind of abstractic.
That's what they would say. Yeah. Architecton is abstractic.
There's a polar bear on the label.
You really keep bringing back the polar bear on the label.
I think it's funny. So names are hard.
Yeah.
They're really hard.
No, names are, you know, I mean, sometimes it clicks, like, damsels in distress, right? Like, that's, I mean, it sums up the game.
Yeah.
It's a fun name. It's an action name.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really happy with Gunslinging Ramblers for that same reason. It's like, it's slightly abstract, but it does describe what you're doing in the game.
Hey, we're gonna sling guns in the Old West. You know, that's what it says.
Right.
Yeah.
So, I know that I always, like I said, I always try and throw a label on a game that kind of, for me, tells me what the game is about. Like, Camp Troublemaker. Like, I know that's not what I want to use, but I know that tells me what, that reminds me what my game is about that I thought of.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, same thing with Fair Food.
Right. Fair Food, pretty good description. Or The Tattoo Game, as you
The
call
Tattoo
it.
Game, yeah.
That's probably the most terrible name ever.
It's god awful. Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know, we haven't really spent any time. We brought that subject up before, but we've never really talked about it specifically. So I thought since we're running short here on time for the show, I thought it would be worth mentioning.
Yeah, I agree.
That's maybe the most challenging part of this whole process for me so far.
Yeah, no, I can see that. You know, I think sometimes you can come up with a name before you even come up with a game.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't, it's like Gunslinger and Ramblers. I had the name before I had the game.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't do that, yeah, it can be tough to try and kind of retro-engineer that because you want it to be catchy.
You're putting a label on an idea.
Yeah,
that's... It's hard.
It can be tough. So, yeah. I was trying to think of some other games that we like and how we feel about the names. I mean, like, Stone Age, right? That's not a terribly great name for a game.
Well,
I mean, it does describe the game, I guess, but...
It describes the setting for the game, but nothing about how the game is played.
True.
Dominion. Dominion is... It's just basically, it's, okay, that works. You know, I don't know what I would call it to make it better. It works, it's fine. You gain points in the game by building your dominion. You get points for having estates and duchies and provinces. So that's where that name comes from. What else?
You wonder why we could think of 10,000 games when we're talking, but when you try to think about names for games...
Yeah, it's funny.
Your mind just says, zoop.
Yeah.
So...
Anyway.
Yeah. I think it's something good. I'd be curious to know if any other designers have issues with that, or mm-hmm. maybe other designers are like, man, I'm super good at coming right. up with names.
Or do you have any kind of a process that you follow to help you generate those things?
Right.
I'd be interested to hear... what you guys do. I guess we should move on.
Let us move on then, sir.
Indeed. We should move on to plugs.
Plugs!
What do you want to plug tonight?
I'm going to plug a game that I've been playing.
Okay.
It's a game podcast, but it's actually a video game. I've been playing it on my iPhone. They may also make it for...
Android?
I don't know, because I don't care, because I have an iPhone. So, the name of the game is Puzzle Craft. So the point of this game is you're playing, I think it was 99 cents, by the way. The point of the game is you're harvesting things and you're mining things. And then you're trying to use that, those things that you get, to build your town up. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So think of like a classic Zynga game where you're just trying to build your town, right?
Yeah.
But you basically, in a Zynga game, you just click buttons and you wait for stuff to happen and then right. you build stuff. And this is not like that. This is you actively go out and get stuff. And the way you do that is when I go to my fields to farm, there's like a big checkerboard, a 6x6 checkerboard of things. Wheat, grasslands, trees, fruits, vegetables, that kind of stuff. And you have to make matches of three. And you just draw a line with your finger to do that. And you can get more than three. You can get 10 in a row, right? And so the idea is you're trying to make these angles. And the better job you do, the more stuff you get more quickly, right? Mm-hmm. So you can directly drive the building in the game. And I actually beat the game. I say beat the game. Like, I bought everything you could possibly buy without spending any money. Because you can spend in-game money. I'll tell you, it's not really... There's no really reason to. Because it's so easy. In 2 days... I completed the game and have just been waiting for the expansion ever since.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
But, I mean, the game was 99 cents, and I think if you were to not be psychotic about it, it would probably take you a week or two. But I was like, I must farm more. I must farm. Mining. So, yeah.
Okay.
But it's a fun game. Puzzle Craft, easy to play, easy to find on the iOS store.
Right on.
Highly recommend. Good times. Best game I've played in a while.
Mm-hmm.
How about you, sir?
Can I plug a movie?
Okay.
It's not really what we do here, but it was so much fun.
Sure.
It's a movie called Ektha Tiger. E-K-T-H-A Tiger. A few weeks ago, Christine and I think it was a Saturday afternoon, we're bored. We're like, hey, let's go see a movie. What's playing? I don't know. Open up the phone, look at the movie theater listing... And there's this movie there called Ektha Tiger. I'm like, what is that? I've never heard of that. So I looked it up online. It's a Bollywood film. And it's the highest grossing Bollywood film of all time. I watched the trailer, and it looked awesome. It looked incredible. So we're like, let's go. Let's go see a crazy, ridiculous, awesome Indian Bollywood action movie.
Right.
In the theater. And it was fantastic. It is, without a doubt, the best movie I have seen in a theater this year.
Wow.
Yeah. It was excellent. It was like James Bond, but Indian.
Nice.
Yeah.
Was there a big musical number at the end?
There was one in the middle and one at the end. Big, crazy Bollywood, dancing, 200 people dancing with crazy costumes and everything.
Right.
And it was ridiculous and hilarious and fun. There were two like romantic music videos in it, but everything else was like non-stop action, like James Bond quality action, fight scenes, car chases and stuff.
Wow.
It was incredible. We loved it. It was like a little over 3 hours long, and there was an intermission in the middle.
Like literally an intermission?
Like literally got up and every lights up for 10-15 minutes. And when the lights came up, and we realized we were the only white people in the whole theater, but it didn't bother us.
Right.
Us,
So there was like local
oh, yeah,
people
yeah.
from India were checking
yeah.
it out.
Yeah,
Well, and I'm sure if they lived here most of their life, they were probably super excited to be able to see it in the theater here.
And maybe Bollywood films at the theater are normal around here. Maybe I just never pay attention. I don't know. Okay. But it was funny. The lights come up, and this kid is sitting next to us, kind of leans over, and he's like, "So, guys watch a lot of Bollywood movies?" I'm like, "No. Do you speak Hindi?" "No."
Was it subtitled?
Yeah, subtitled, yeah. And like, and he's like, so what are you doing here? It's like they've never seen white people in the theater before.
That's funny. Well, because I mean,
oh sure, so many people don't care, you know. Right. It was a fantastic experience. Like I said, best movie I've seen in the theater this year. Super super fun. Super. It was really funny. The action was great. Highly recommended. Top notch. Excellent. Totally accessible to American audiences. There is silly Bollywood singing and dancing, but it's still a blast.
Awesome.
That's part of the fun. So right. Highly recommend it. Check it out.
Cool. No, that's a good plug.
Yeah. I guess that about wraps us up here.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you once again, listeners, for listening to Building the Game. We appreciate it so much. Check out our website, which is buildingthegamepodcast.com. You can email us at buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter @podcastBTG. You can follow me @poorly_designed or follow Jason @JASlingerlin. Whoop. You can like us on Facebook. Jason made a pledge last week that if we get 100 likes on Facebook, there's going to be some kind of extra special bonus thing on there. Still don't know what he's planning for that, but we'll see. But we'll only see if we get to 100 likes, so come on, help us out.
I'm not even going to tell Rob.
I don't even know.
Until we get to 100 likes.
I don't even know what he has planned. I'm scared.
It might be something bad for him.
So. It probably means a lot more work for me at the very least, yeah. You can log into iTunes and give us 5 stars on iTunes, please. Any comments you want to give on there, we would appreciate it. Send us emails. Get in touch with us on Twitter. Make comments on the website. We promise we will read all that stuff on the show. Anything else?
That'll do it.
Okay. Thanks again, everybody.
Thank you.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game. Are you still there?
Are you there?
Are you still listening?
Are you listening?
If you are, we have a secret offer just for you. Contact us on Twitter with the #BTGDice or send us an email with the subject BTGDice. And we will send you a secret bonus gift just for you.
No, really, we will. Good cut.